Blog Talk Radio.
Deaths and important cases and events that are going on. Here are the birthdays today. Schuyler Colfax, he was the vice president in the Ulysses S. Grant administration, 1869 to 1873. And those of you like candy, Fanny Farmer was born today. If you remember the film Lawrence of Arabia, I think Alec Guinness played Faisal. And we had Peter O'Toole, who played Lawrence. In 1883, Faisal became after the British chased the Turks out of Mesopotamia, or which became Iraq, Iran, and all of that, and Syria. And then, of course, the British got the oil concessions. Faisal was set up as a kind of a puppet king. And, of course, the problems we have today in that region dates back to how the British did not use the foresight or political foresight and witness history to realize what was coming down the pike, all these problems that we have out of that region. A famous Union leader was born today, Sidney Hillman. Those of you who remember Joan Crawford, the super bitch, Lucille LeSueur, she was born in San Antonio on this day. And Wernher von Braun, who was one of the Nazi scientists, if you want to call him that, who worked at Peenemünde and developed the V-1 bomber, rocket missiles and all of that. They wanted to be captured by the Americans. They didn't want to end up in Russia working under Stalin. And if they didn't produce, they'd end up in Siberia in some gulag. Well, anyway, here is the interview, an interview with Wernher von Braun.
Is also proud of him. Der Spiegel magazine runs with the headline, Germans in the front line. German television also pays tribute. The name Wernher von Braun is on everyone's lips. An American satellite is orbiting the Earth, the commentator says. A triumph for the U.S. Army research team headed by former German rocket expert Wernher von Braun.
I started working for rocketry in space in 1930, and I have looked forward to this day for 28 years.
Diesen Tag herbeigesehnt, der uns jetzt das gewünschte Ergebnis gebracht hat.
Increasingly, the media focus extends to the missile man's private life. A happy von Braun, rocket fetishist, as loving husband and perfect dad. a flying visit to Germany. In the late 50s, von Braun crosses the Atlantic several times for family reunions. But the visits home are now also PR exercises. In 1959, with the support of the US Army, a movie about the Star Rocketeer is made near Munich. A tricky business for everyone concerned.
There was the man who had created those bombs. He attacked my house. I was not a friend of his. I had to, right from the start, I had to resist becoming a close friend of his because he was charming. He could charm the pants off anyone, I think. And he was a very clever man. You knew that right away. I had tremendous arguments with him because he maintained that he was only a scientist, that he was not a Nazi. And I said, that's nonsense. Of course you're a Nazi. You belong to the Nazi party. And why do you say you're not an answer? We had these kind of discussions.
Premiere in Munich, glitz and glamour. The movie shows no trace of the discord between director and subject. Thompson doesn't present von Braun as a Nazi, more as a non-political opportunist.
So far, I've managed to steer clear of the Braun shirts.
Braun bagage, aber...
Then I mustn't join the party.
Vielleicht ich tue es freiwillig.
You think I want to?
Aber wenn ich meine
It's the
Arbeit
price I have to pay if I want to continue my work.
Muss ich den Preis dafür zahlen?
Kurt Jürgens as Werner von Braun, impressive but one-dimensional. Director J. Lee Thompson has his work cut out with the real von Braun and the actor playing him.
I cast Kurt Jürgens because we needed a German actor. Kurt would always turn on the charm, as indeed von Braun was a charmer. And so the film became, in a way, not what I wanted, a fair balance.
An dem Tag, an dem die V-Raketen auf London fallen, ist der Krieg gewonnen. Reichsführer Himmler wird Ihnen selbst sagen, was Sie für Deutschland geleistet haben. Heil Hitler.
Heil Hitler.
Von Braun is pleased with the film, and so is the U.S. Army that sponsored it. Critics are less impressed. There's talk of whitewashing. In Far Off Huntsville, the movie does not cause much of a stir. The Army Rocket Center receives a high-ranking visitor. In 1959, President Eisenhower pays his first visit to von Braun's realm of rockets. But the old soldier keeps the Rocketeers at arm's length, and he is certainly not enamored with von Braun. The pictures are deceiving. Eisenhower is one of the few people who do not succumb to Werner von Braun's charm. Even so, the president bore gifts. Eisenhower's first visit brings a transfer to the civilian space agency NASA. Promotion and new opportunities. Von Braun hopes for new sources of funding for his 5,000-strong team of Rocketeers in Huntsville. Playing the Russian card, he secures the backing of an increasing number of decision-makers in Washington. He emphasizes the Soviet threat.
I'm convinced that the Russian concept is very clear. They consider the control of space around the Earth very much like, shall we say, the great maritime powers considered the control of the seas in the 16th to the 18th century. And they say, if we want to control this planet, we have to control the space around it.
The 12th of April, 1961, another black day for America and for Werner von Braun. With Yuri Gagarin, the Soviets pull off another coup. The first man in space is a Russian. Sputnik was a shock. Gagarin's flight is a humiliation for the proud Americans and Werner von Braun. Incoming President John F. Kennedy, only recently established in the White House, immediately comes under massive pressure. He needs to react.
Kennedy's response to that, you know, He was mad. He turned people and said, I want to know what we can do to beat the Russians. Mm-hmm. We got to beat those people. And Kennedy understood the psychology of this. He understood the importance.
The young president has to show the world that he can rise to the Soviet challenge. For von Braun, it's the chance of a lifetime. He sees only one way to beat the Soviets, to send a manned mission to the moon. And he pushes the idea wherever and whenever he can.
Are we supposed to wait until there's a red flag on the moon?
Finally, in May 1961, Kennedy makes a speech announcing precisely what von Braun so desperately wants and has dreamt of for so many years. America will put an astronaut on the moon by the end of the decade.
New American enterprise.
That was the interview and little audio biography of Wernher von Braun. Among the other birthdays today, great British bass baritone. These are very hard. He sings German opera. Norman Bailey was born today. And the daughter of Christopher Plummer, who was born in Montreal, Canada, but lives, I think, in Connecticut. His daughter is also an actress, Amanda Plummer, was born today. Among the deaths, we had another czar who was assassinated. Paul I was strangled. And then the Russian Minister of War, Alex Kuropatin, died today. And then the little worm who played in these movies with Sidney Greenstreet, Peter Lorre, died today. And then the first recipient of an artificial heart, Dr. Barney Clark, a Mormon, who was also a dentist. He lasted 112 days. He died today. Then the singing nun committed suicide. Among the events today, we had Felius Kosciuszko, Polish patriot who came to the United States, not the United States, came to the colonies to fight alongside Washington and Lafayette and Baron von Steuben to defeat the British and drive them, or the English, and drive them out so America, the United States, would become independent. He returned to Poland and then fought over there against the Russians and the Tsar's armies who were carving up Poland. Boundaries have gone back and forth between Prussia and Russia and Austria. On this day, Lewis and Clark reached the Pacific. It's one of the most beautiful sights I ever saw was Astoria in Oregon, which is the furthest point of the North American continent, at least of the United States, that touches the it goes out into the Pacific Ocean. Very beautiful there. And then the first recorded use, this is language, of the word okay was published in a Boston newspaper, the Boston Morning Post. This is how words get into the English language. And unlike other languages like Latin, English is a living language that 100 years ago you didn't have terms like supermarket, internet, telephones. These are just examples of how words are introduced into the English language, into our lexicon. And in 1868, the University of California was founded in Oakland, California. And of course, it's having great problems today. Overpaid university administrators, the presidents from Canada, a lot of problems. And also, they keep building law schools. And there's a huge and growing statistical number of lawyers who are out of work, can't find work, can't find litigation, can't stir up enough litigation, whatever. And the question is becoming, do we have too many, is America over-lawyered? Do we have too many law schools? Shouldn't would-be law students, if they pass certain criteria, certain tests and all that, be given grants and loans so they can go to law schools that are already existed? So maybe it's time to close some law schools and instead transfer that money into scholarships, grants, and loans, and put money into medical facilities. We don't need lawyers. We need more medical people, dentists, people who are gerontologists, pediatricians. That's the profession we need. We don't need more litigation. On this day also, the notorious Mountain Meadow Massacre. This involved some Arkansas Methodists who were emigrating to California. They were ambushed and brutally murdered by, massacred by a renegade Mormon band, a guy named John Doyle Lee, with some Paiute Indians, and it became a controversial documentary and also a movie called The Mountain September Dawn. It was ironically shot in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. John Voight starred in this movie. And it's the legacy that might come up in if more, Romney gets the nomination for the Republican president in November, or this summer, in the elections in November. Here is a heads up. We are hearing that one of the reasons Jeb Bush endorsed Romney is that he may get the nod to, if Romney gets the enough delegates, that the Republican convention will nominate Jeb Bush as the vice presidential candidate. Now, it's interesting. Jeb Bush is married to a Latina. I believe he converted to the Catholic faith. His family, I think, is Episcopalian. And so this is going to be real interesting. But I think his father, George Bush the first, was a Baptist. He married a woman who was, I think she was a Baptist or a Methodist. Certainly weren't Catholics. And then on this day, we have an interesting U.S. Supreme Court case, SCOTUS, came down in 1981 about a male's being one's, only a male could be charged with rape, or only a male could rape. It's something like that. We're going to have to get into this because it's a lot of controversy. We're seeing more and more women who are, in effect, having sex with underage boys and seducing them. But the case is Michael M. versus Superior Court of Sonoma County, California. Very controversial case, and we're getting into a lot of that. And let's see, that's the events for today. Now, was Robbie right? This is the question. He's got an interview coming on 2020 tonight. I saw part of it. That he said he didn't take the plea bargain because they wanted him to cop to hate crime. He said there was no hate crime, and he did say that Tyler Clemente had problems even before this illegal video cam taping, and it wasn't a sexual thing. It was a stupid, what I call post-adolescent mistake, but it's still a violation of Tyler's privacy. But again, it's been reported that Tyler Clemente told his mother that he was gay, and she responded, "Well, you can't have kids," and she left. But she surfaced in the courtroom with her husband, who had accepted Tyler for the decision he had made, even though he was still in psychosexual development. I mean, what does an 18-year-old kid know? Stop and think about that one. Now, a scandal that should every public official who is courting corruption or embracing corruption or who has been corrupt and is hoping that it's covered up and forgotten about or we'll never be prosecuted, the Ross Miracarini case has a lot of important aspects to it. Number one, there's a question about, was he qualified in the first place to even run for that office and the preceding office? He was a so-called investigator in the district attorney's office, Terrence Hallinan, and that corrupt administration, back in the 90s. And they received federal grant money, I think from the Department of Justice, those type of funds, and other federal funds. Now, Mayor Karimi decided to run for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, or what they're called, aldermen, or selectmen back east. He won that election, and in that position, he oversaw federal HUD funds, aid funds coming into San Francisco. And so the question was, there's supposed to be a year separation for executives who handle these type of funds. They can't run for another office where they will be handling those funds. Again, this is the way I understand it. And I will clarify this when I get more on it, because we're looking for the exact site or statute, excuse me. So there's a question that he was may have been disqualified even before this incident where he physically assaulted his wife. The other thing is there's an allegation that he's a closet Muslim, and we need to be looking at these people because they're bringing that agenda into the public sector. And then when there are judges, we've seen judges who are allowing Sharia law to come into American jurisprudence, and it doesn't belong there. And one of the things about Sharia law is that the man is more than a patriarch. A woman is chattel, and the children are chattel. And these people have not changed. You know, Islam is not the peaceful religion the propagandists would have us believe. So there's the question of that. And then also on this date in 1996 was at a club in North Beach, California, North Beach, San Francisco in California here, that an illegal alien named Juan Pifre, who came from a banking family in Argentina, the Bank de Provincia of the province of Buenos Aires, a bank that's the oldest bank in Argentina, is believed to have held or may still hold assets that were stolen not only from European Jews, but from Europeans in the countries occupied by the Nazis. And there's more on the Nazi occupation in the countries in World War II. For instance, this is the origin of this banning automobiles and forcing people to ride bicycles. It's interesting, we were researching this because there's a growing number of people, citizens, who are concerned about this bicyclist agenda. They don't pay any taxes, they don't pay for licenses, they don't have liability insurance when they run down people, and they have killed people. You can't see them at night, they don't have safety devices, and the thinking is that if they put their wheels on the road, they should follow the rules of the road, and if they don't, they should be cited and have their bikes taken away, because they're just as dangerous when you run down, especially a senior citizen or a child, and people have been killed. Anyway, the Germans, Nazi armies, especially on the Isle of Jersey, that's the closest point in the English Channel that the Nazis were able to penetrate in after they kicked the British off the continent at Dunkirk, that the Nazis occupied the Isle of Jersey, and they issued a proclamation that automobiles were banned, so people had to ride bicycles. In Vichy, France, the same situation. People who were not allowed to have automobiles, and they had to use bicycles or whatever public transportation there was. So this apparently is where this bicycle agenda is coming from the Nazis in World War II. The same thing with this business about hate crime. We call it the Caligula Law because Emperor Caligula, who succeeded Tiberius, was a psycho, and he was engaged in incest, all kinds of horrible tortures and murders. He came up with the idea that those who opposed the Roman gods and the emperor as God were enemies of the state, and in effect, they were political and religious dissidents. So the Romans had laws on their books to deal with the so-called religious dissidents, and they threw them to the lions, crucified them, all kinds of horrible things. Caligula came up with the idea, it's not enough to kill them and kill them quickly, they have to suffer. And this is what this whole hate crime agenda has become. Originally, the idea was to discourage Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis. That's not what has happened. What has happened is we have people with a homosexual, lesbian, NAMBLA agenda, and anti-military, open homosexuality, lesbianism, and NAMBLA in the military, and who are using these laws to intimidate and suppress dissension to that agenda. And it's more than overkill, it's super overkill, and it's wasting important resources, especially since now there's less and less money to keep the courthouses open, and it's going to be harder for people to get access to both our state and federal courts. So this whole thing needs to be revisited, and these laws need to be scrapped, and let's go back to treating everybody equal. If you attack somebody because of their race, religion, ethnic origin, occupation, apply the laws that have been on the books and apply them across the board. And when homosexuals, such as Juan Pifre, who's mercifully dead, attack heterosexuals, and that has happened, we don't hear about it because the morons in the media censored and suppressed this. The law should be applied to them, too. We don't see that. We will expose it, since this is the date, it's an infamous date in California's judicial history, where poor Stephen Nery, 18-year-old Navy sailor, what we believe was drugged, he was stalked, drugged, lured to Pifre's house where Pifre raped him. And we don't hear about males raping other males. It's the crime that they dare not mention its name. So it's time to start addressing that. And incidentally, after the Obama maladministration pushed through Congress the abolition of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, there has been a huge influx of this filth on the web, where there's the glorification of male rape, both of civilians and military, and targeting kids in their high school, wrestlers, and that, all of that agenda. And it's right there. We even see the lawyers who are behind some of this crap and this pollution, this filth that's polluting the Internet. And getting back to the Mira Karimi case, what's so sorted about it is that all of his backers have been involved in this type of abuse. The former sheriff, Michael Hennessy, been there for 30 years, a typical Southern sheriff situation. Among his crimes against innocent people, a senior citizen, Roman Catholic nun, who was in a political protest, was arrested. She was strip searched and thrown naked into a cold cell. Not even Bull Connor or any of the Southern racists during the civil rights protests down in the South in the 60s did things like this to the ministers and the nuns and the priests who were arrested in the political demonstrations down in Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi. But yet it happened in San Francisco. Also, he had strip searched other people illegally. There was male rape, I understand, it was rampant up there. Other case where U.S. military certified mail sent by certified letter, return receipt requested, was signed for illegally and then destroyed. It was sent to Stephen Nery after they illegally shipped him to San Quentin prison. So these are among the abuse issues that the backers of this Ross Mira Karimi has used to try to stay in office. And so we shall see what we shall see. And of course, today we had the Wernher von Braun birthday is very important because it was a race after World War II to the rug between the Russians and us to get the German scientists who worked on the rockets and also submarines and nuclear fission, among other things, and also with the Japanese to get the germ warfare work that was done by Major Ishii in Mukden in Manchuria. He started a thing called Green Cross, which was a blood bank operation here in America, where people who didn't have money to get through the end of the month would sell their plasma for $10, and they didn't screen the plasma for HIV. So this is what happened. So we will be back Monday with more interesting thoughts, and also go to our Amicus Veritas YouTube site, AmiCusVeritas, and we will end with our usual theme. We're still having politics and poker here, so here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to
do? I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a kick.
Ready? Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big Ace.
Ace Betts.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names? names we can use. Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Well, that's what the political movers and shakers may be thinking. This is Peter Paul Verzola. We'll be back Monday at 4 o'clock. We'll have some more interesting interviews, and we're preparing a lot of interesting, rare history from our archives and interviews we have done. This is Peter Paul Verzola. Have a good weekend. Good night.